What would you like? Would you like to ask some questions? Or you would like some talk? You have been hearing talk so many. It is up to you what you would like to have.
Accidents
do occur from day to day, you find. Every day there are so many accidents every day. They come up as a result for the reactions of the past. Yes,
please. Is there any problem in leaving your body if you have a bad heart, weak heart?
No problem.
Is there any problem in leaving your body in meditation if you have a weak heart?
Well, by meditation you mean, sir?
Yes.
Yes, meditation does not affect weak or strong heart. That is just withdrawing of the soul, which gives strength to the body. Heart works at the level of prana, or the air. Vitalness. So by withdrawing the sensory current, heart is not affected because prana is gone, you see. There are two powers working in the body. One is of the prana or the vital airs, and the other is of the soul. The prana, the currents of the vital layers of prana are called motor currents. And the currents of the soul are called sensory currents. So that affects in the way the yogi take up, because they control the pranas. So when pranas are withdrawn, that will be hard to be affected. But if the pranas are not tightened, only sensory current is withdrawn. That does not affect the heart eyes. Then go down everything. Because the pranas are working even when you are withdrawn from the body. So there is a difference, vast difference between the withdrawal from the body of a yogi and a follower of the path of the master. The yogic way, both pranas and the soul are withdrawn. In that case, naturally, that affects the heart. But in the way of the path of the master, pranas are not touched. So it is the soul that is current that are withdrawn. That is why that has literally nothing to do with the heart. But in that case, if you are withdrawn, you see sensory current to withdrawn. When it resumes the body, that is charge, like a charge given to the body. And perhaps in many cases, weakness of heart is cured, because you will find the purity power is in our souls. Let's see, I'll give you an example, you see. Doctors are there not to cure mind that. They are there only to clear the way to help nature to work. Any retardation in the system that is removed, and the rest is part of that God power or the soul power which is working in the body. You think I tell you, just see the case of those who cannot afford to go to the doctors. They have their sickness and their passes are in 2 days. They don't take anything. Fasting is the best medicine, you see. When the poor fellow cannot afford to have that through the even naturally they fast. In 2 or 3 days, the disease goes. By fasting whatever deformed matter is in the body, that is clear practically. So the rest remains for the soul to cure it. It is the purity power in the soul that cures the body. Mind was not drugs, although we pay fee for that. Their help is only to just let the system, if there's any thing standing in the working of the system, that is removed. I met a doctor when I was reading, you see, very old days. So I went to him, what he used to do. He simply would write a very long prescription. I think he was an allopathic doctor. He would just give me about 10, 12, 13 medicines, long prescription. I was sitting by him, and I marked that he had written a very long prescription. But what he did actually, he took it a bottle, put it some aquamarine juice in it, and some peppermint. That's all. He shook the bottle, and the bottle was not full. He said, put more aquamarine juice. To fill the bottle. He gave something laxative along with it. And the patient went away. And I asked the doctor, well, what have you done? You have given a long prescription, but you have put only one laxative thing and one little peppermint or cardamom or some extra thereof. He says, well, truly speaking, doctors cannot cure. They simply remove any impediment in the system that I have given him laxative. That will be clear. Then 1 or 2 days will be all right. So purity power lies in the soul. We simply have to just get the system free of all foreign matter. That's all. So soul has a great purity power. Also, you will find, take the example, you see. You are very hungry. You have come and put one morsel of food in your mouth. 1 or 2, then you drink a quarter a cup of water. You feel strength. But truly speaking, that food for 1 morsel or 2 which you have taken, that must give strength only when it is digested. Not before. But you feel strength. What it is that gives you that satisfaction. So, truly speaking, you see, it is the soul that has the purity power. Diseases come and go that is due to the, we break the law of nature, we eat too much, which is not digested, and the foreign matter in the system that retards the circulation of blood and digestion system, and there's difficulty. If that is removed, you find 2 or 3 days you recover. Sometimes we take medicines. Some medicine go to just put down, not to clear, you see, cure the disease, but simply action, reaction. By taking so many medicines, our cases become still insidious. So best thing to have, let the soul work in its own way, fast. So purity power lies in the soul. And also, by taking muscles 1 or 2 in the mouth, you can get strength that comes from the soul. So soul has a great power, you see. God is so great that with one word of His, He creates the whole universe. Our souls are also of the same essence as that of God. We are also very, very powerful. But as our souls, the expression of which is called attention, that is diffused into the world, we feel very feeble, very weak. If we draw all attention into our own selves, we feel very strong. So it is the soul that has the curative power. And we have to know that. That is, what is the difference between an average man and a master? Average man is like that, as I told you. His attention, which is the expression of the soul, is diffused into the world through the outgoing faculties. And the master is one who has controlled his attention at his command. With so much froth and foam on the sea, you will find the water running underneath his skin. He is still at heart, but he has also the power to control his attention at will. So, with that, he also works too much, with all that he is compensated. I remember our master, you see, once he had a very bad cold. He could not breathe. When I asked three questions, just may I bring some medicine? He said, no, Kipuranthu, no medicine required. I just little lie down at the door. So this is what I mean to say, that there is great power within our own selves, and that we have forgotten. Master, come, tell us, well, look here, you are great in man. If you know how to control your outgoing faculties, through which our attention, which is the expression of soul, goes out and is identified with the outside things, diffused in so many ways, if you know how to concentrate and withdraw your attention from outside, you have great power. Just take the example of the sun rays. Sun rays do not burn us. When those rays are passed through a garment lens, whatever thing you put on the other side, that will begin to burn. So similarly, it is said that masters who know this, how to withdraw their attention, control it at their will, and become the mouthpiece of God, or come in contact with the God in expression power, they can do all that for days and days and months and months. You see? That is why Christ said, we cannot live on bread alone. This outside bread, no. There is more powerful bread, the bread of life, which is within us, each one of us. That is called the world. That is the power of all creation. That is the controlling power of all. You know, control our bodies, our souls in the body. So that, when they just dip into themselves, they will sing. So that is the true bread of life, you see. That is why Christ said, I am the bread of life. This bread of life has come down from heaven whoever partakes of it gets ever lost in life. Then what was that bread, you say? Or the water of life, what the Master says? You find, they refer to it, all Masters in their own scriptures, of course in their own languages. He said, Word was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. So Word, what is called Word? Word is that God into expression power. That worldless state of God when it came into being, that God into action or God into expression power of the worldless state of God is what is called Word. That is the bed of life. And we have our own self, I tell you. Our soul being of the same essence as that of God. But we are also, in a small scale, great satisfaction, great satiety, I would say. You don't need any food whatsoever. There are so many classes of people. There are meatarians, there are fruitarians, there are vegetarians, there are waterarians, then comes there are airarians. I have seen men who can live on no bread, merely on air only. There was one lady at the time of her master. She did not take any food, any water. She never paid any call of nature, also any call of nature. She worked for every ordinary. So that is what his master sometimes refers to. We don't follow exactly what they say. What Christ said, we cannot live on bread alone. Bread is the food for the body. Maybe in the form of meat, vegetables, fruit, or anything. When you learn about it, you can even live on water for days and days and days together. Even without water, you can. This is the dual bread, I tell you. That satiety or satisfaction or health, you might say, that is Master's hair when they are fully developed. So when they come, they awaken us. They say, then look here, why are you going in a delusion? You have the great power. You are what you say. You are spirit in man. We are soul, your souls, not the bodies. The soul has the same power on a smaller scale as God has it. God is all satisfaction. God is all this. God does not live on anything. You see? That is the food in himself. Our soul being of the same essence as that of God, it is also the same quality as God on the small scale. If you know how to live within your own self, by the time outside there's no hunger, there's no water. And Masters have referred in the scriptures, they say, there is no sleep and there is no hunger. There is no thirst. When soul rises above all these, what you say, tentacles have been body without some things. Feel full satisfaction for days together. I told you that lady lived for so many years. Our sansa, she was working all day, work, taking bath, going out, attending satsangs, and doing other work. And also I just read in a book, lately given out by Dr. who has just passed away, he referred to that, that we can live on air alone. So these are something, you see, not only repetitive, but hints are given, they are there in the. But we do not truly understand what it is. You can live without ending in full strength, if you know how to live, right within your own self. To wait in man, so when our masters come, they come to awaken us. Well, look here. They tell us, when look here, you are forgotten, you see, your bliss, your joy, happiness, your satisfaction, you see, personified. But you have come under the control of mind, and mind has come under the control of outgoing faculties, and our soul is just gifted with the attention, referring to the outside things, and identified with them. We are awake from outside, but asleep within. They come often and we are awake, as you see. It is just like, I'll give you an example. Just there are two gases, one is oxygen, the other is hydrogen. Oxygen gas is a life-giving thing. When patients are dangerously ill, they give the oxygen cylinder to give life. But hydrogen is a gas that goes to just stop your throat, stop your breathing. When two things are just mixed up in a certain proportion at 2-0, that just becomes something, the property of which is different from both the gases. So it is something like that. Our soul is pure consciousness. It has got the same qualities as that of God on a miniature scale. God is all wisdom, that thing. And even the child born who wants to know every time something more. Goes on all through life, he knows, he understands, learns and learns so many things, and not satisfied. And the Upanishads tell us what is that by knowing which nothing more remains to be known. That is, your soul will be down from mind and outgoing faculties. You rise within your own self. You are wisdom. You see, God is all wisdom, and you are also wisdom. When you know within your own self, you rise. You awaken to your own self, you might say. You see this satisfaction. And when you come in contact with God, you are all wisdom. God is everlasting, where nobody even dreams of dying. If man is sick, anything he wants to live. That is unnatural. The reflection of God is with us, because he is everlasting. Even our soul is everlasting. With all what we see that soul do leave the body, with all that we know, at heart of hearts, we convince that we have to leave the body. Why? That reflection of God is within our soul. God is love. When naturally we have love, that is innate in us. The question remains where it is attached. When our love, our soul, as I told you, God is light, God is life, and God is love, our souls being of the same essence of God, we are also the same. That is why you find in Corinthians, know ye not that your spirit is man? If so, why you doubt that you will die? Why you are afraid now? So by knowing self, our self is all, everything. So if we just dip into our own self, you see, rise within our own self, you might say. Or you may say, if you just liberate your soul from mind and outgoing faculties, your joy and happiness and bliss itself, your satisfaction itself, your all joy, love. But when that is attached to the outgoing faculties, to such like things which are not lasting but changing every moment of life, that will be for the period, for the time. You remain attached with that, you see. You feel joy, happiness, satisfaction. When you are in dawn, or those things are taken away from you, you feel unhappiness. And our souls, so long as these are tied to the outside things, we are changing every moment of life. We are someday attached here, then we don't, then attached here, then we don't. This thing gives us unhappiness. Whereas we are all joy, all bliss, all perfection, all love. So masters give us an experience. He says, well, man, look here, you are not this body. You are, your true home is the home of your father, which is all consciousness. You were of the same class of religion as that of your father, who is everlasting. You came once from that home, but you are stuck fast in this dust of body and outer things. How long will you continue that delusion? So he comes up, he says, dear friend, all masters tell like that. Balaram says, also you belong to the heavens. You are not stuck fast in the dust of the body and outside attachments. It should be shame for you. You are the just dweller of the true home of your father of the heavens. You are stuck fast in the world. If you see some son of a king playing in the street bars, what do people tell him? But shame on you, you are son of a king, why are you growing with the sweet water? So something like that, whenever masters come, you see, they say, look, your soul, your true home is that which is everlasting, unchangeable permanence, but you are now stuck fast in body and outgoing faculties. Identified with the outside thing so much so that you are forgotten. So they come up, we say, we are sent here. Why are you sent here? We don't know what is the God who sent us. But so long we have come here, we have forgotten our own self. Our souls, you see, our conscious entities have the same qualities as that of God. And that is mixed up with mind, identified with it so much so that it become active. You see, whatever is sown, we shall reap. Action, reaction, go along. If somehow or another we can liberate ourselves from the outgoing faculties and from mind, we are of the same sense as that of God, we are spirited man. We have got the same qualities as that of God, that God has got. And when we come in tune, become the mouthpiece of God, God does wonderful things.
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The talk you just heard was from November 25th, 1963, and was given at Merrill Hall in Carmel, California. Our reader this morning is Jack Weinstein. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. I'm reading from the Teachings of Kripal Singh, Volume 2, starting on page 123. Mind, definition. Mind stuff is made of a highly rarefied matter of sattva substance and the elements. Gossamer-like, it spreads in the body with its tentacles deeply rooted in the senses, working through sense organs. Its base also goes far above, rooted as it is in the universal or cosmic mind, Chid Akash. It serves as a link between the material body and conscious spirit or soul in the body, which is enlivening both the mind and the body. Like fire, it is a good servant, but a bad master. So long as the soul is in the mind zone, it is a prisoner. It is engulfed by the mind and is subject to it, and has to obey the dictates of the mind. The mind and the soul, combined in their turn, are locked up in forms, causal, astral, and physical successively. The mind feels shy of going in and coming in touch with the sound current, for there it loses its identity and freedom. Instead, it is prepared to go to the extent of sitting in trenches in the face of bullets to win a bottom victory, or will gladly face the risks of crossing the Atlantic to gain a name or establish a record. What constitutes desire? All conceptions in the mind are desires. At present, the mind desires those things it cannot get. When it realizes the truth, the whole of nature will be at its beck and call. Mind is nothing but a storehouse of karmic impressions coming down from the beginning of time in an endless series of incarnations. The body cannot but perform karmas. And karmas fashion the body and all that is of the body and bodily relations. The entire world is a play of karmic impressions stored in the mind by the people of the world. This is why the world is termed as Manomai Srishti, or creation of the mind. The mind by itself is not conscious. It is the consciousness of the soul that the mind reflects. Anyone whose soul is under the mind's influence and control becomes an image of the mind, for he forgets his true self. We call this ego or I-hood, for one thinks, I am everything. God plus mind is man, and man minus mind is God. Intellect. What are the attributes of mind? Mind has four facets or attributes, to wit, one, chit. It may be likened to a lake in which countless streams of impressions are imperceptibly pouring in all the time. Two, manas. It is the thinking faculty of the mind which cogitates over such impressions as rise onto the surface of the lake in the form of ripples and waves, just as the breeze of consciousness blows over the waters of the chit lake and sets in motion an endless chain of thoughts, one after the other. 3. Buddhi, B-U-D-H-I, or intellect. It is the faculty of reason, ratiocination, discrimination, and finally, decision. Ratiocination is to reason logically and methodically. Buddhi, or intellect. It is the faculty of reason, ratiocination, discrimination, and finally, decision. After considering the pros and cons as presented by the manas, it is the grand arbiter that tries to solve the problems of life which come before it. 4. Ahankar, or ego. It is the self-assertive faculty of the mind, for it likes to assume credit for all the acts done, and thus prepares a rich harvest of karmas that keep one moving up and down in the giant wheel of life. All actions leave an impression behind which dull minds fail to decipher. Only when the mind develops, and this it does when we travel within and upwards, the memory revives and the record becomes intelligible. Question. We have been taught in our satsang that all thoughts that enter the mind during meditation register on the astral and take the form of karma for us. Would you please comment on this? Answer. The thoughts continue feeding the mind and register impressions in the citta, the subconscious reservoir of the mind, and serve as seed karma to fructify at a later stage. However, the thoughts entering the mind during meditations become more potent to bear fruit at the earliest opportunity, and as such are considered more violently harmful than those entering the mind in the normal waking hours. It should be attributed to the inner concentration during meditations when the mind becomes comparatively more sharp and one-pointed. The listening to the holy sound current as coming from the right side with rapturous attention and absorption therein burns away these seeds of karmas and renders them infructuous to bear fruit. Attributes of mind. What part does intellect play on the path? Very little, where the practical side is concerned. But this does not mean that intellect is harmful to spirituality. If an intellectual man comes on this path and really gives himself up to the master's will and does what he is told, then there is no better disciple for this path than he. For there he has an advantage over an ordinary practical man. And that advantage is he will be able to give out the truth to others in many ways in a language made with well thought out words that will convince the intellectualists more easily than simple words uttered by a mere practical man. Question. Does intellect play any part in self and God realization? Answer. Yes. Intellect plays an important part in understanding the theory of the problem of self-realization. Once the theory is grasped, there is not much left for the intellect to do. Thereafter remains the practice with heart and soul to achieve the goal by a process of self-analysis. For the science of the self is essentially practical. Question. Can we penetrate into the beyond by intellect? Answer. No. Intellect is just one of the faculties of mind, to wit, reasoning. The intellect is earthbound, and so is reasoning based on intellect. How can the less, the greater comprehend, or finite reason, reach infinity? Question. Can we be ever sure of God realization intellectually? Answer, no. God realization is not a subject of intellect. It is a question of actual experience beyond the pole of knowledge. All our talk of God is but inferential and at the most a matter of feelings and emotions, all of which are subject to error. But seeing the inscape with the inner eye opened is believing, and admits of no uncertainty and skepticism. I would advise you not to dwell too much on ratiocination, for it tends to scatter the mind. This thinking self continues to be with us for quite a long time, its range extending from the physical to causal states, and until all these states, which constitute the mind zone, are successfully crossed, it does not drop off. For spiritual progress, stillness of mind and intellect is most essential. Any unnecessary wrestling with the intellect or free play of the mind retards spiritual progress. Concentration means the control of mental vibrations and may be obtained by attuning within to the sound current, which is the astral manifestation of the master power always present with you. Verbiage is simply a vehicle of expression when you try to put forth your innermost feelings seeking solution for the confusion created by your mind. Each question carries a rational answer in its bosom. The human intelligence baffles at times at surface, but if you endeavor to delve deep into the innermost recesses of silence of the heart, you will find ineffable divine bliss gushes forth from the fount of Godhead. Divinity dawns in deep silence. The seer becomes dumb and mute with overwhelming divine intoxication and relishes to absorb his little self in God, the light and sound principles. Philosophy deals with theory, but mysticism deals with contact with reality. Because philosophy works on the intellectual level, whereas mysticism works on the level of the soul. At the level of the intellect, you may remember so many things about what the master has said and given out. That has no life. You are talking only at the level of the intellect. So life or consciousness is something else than intellectual wrangling or wrestling. You may, however, know that thought is an expression of soul being an abstract attribute granted to the humans for smooth working in this world. But you have to transcend this realm of intellect by stilling it when the divine revelations of light and sound current will recharge your soul with divinity and result in eventual mergence with the Absolute. It is beyond the ken of human comprehension to gauge the grandeur and limitlessness of divinity. Your questioning is within the domain of intellect, whereas spirituality dawns when the intellect is silenced by loving devotion and reverential humility. It is during the silent and sublime moments of holy meditation when the child disciple is nearer to the fountainhead of bliss and harmony, and the rare boon of right understanding is granted with the grace of the Master. Regular feeds of holy Nam will manifest to you divine glory in its pristine beauty. The initiates are invariably advised to practice the divine virtues which are helpful for regular progress on the holy path. It is a slow but sure process. Obstacles of the mind. Between God and Spirit, there is no other obstacle but that of a veil of the mind. If this veil were to stop fluttering in the breeze of desires, as it does at present, the Spirit can take in directly the cosmic energy from its very source. The mind may stand in between, but the soul knows what Guru is and what God is. In the temple of God, the mind drags us downward, away from the truth. It is because of the mind that we cannot practice or partake of that which is inside us. It is because of the mind that we cannot partake of that which is inside us. It drags us down like a weight of iron. In turn, the senses are dragging the mind, and the pleasures of the world are dragging the senses. If the attention withdraws from outer environments, leaves the senses, and calms the mind, then only does it realize that it is soul. Have you understood this? Our mind is the barrier between soul and God. Question: why does the mind forget the bliss? Answer: forgetfulness is the chief attribute of human mind. It is due to the gross maya or materialism that we forget the inner bliss and are overtaken by sensuous urges. When inner consciousness grows gradually, mind forgets its lower pulls and relishes inner bliss perpetually with the grace of the Master. Those who are led by their mind impulses are known as manmukhs. Such persons cannot rise above the body consciousness. They do try from time to time, but always keep their minds above the Master, with the result that time and again they fall helplessly. If they could pin their deep faith in the competence of the Master and rely less on their own intellectual reasoning, they could be blessed with this rare privilege of inner inversion to enjoy the supreme bliss. Such dear ones cannot achieve inner stillness and silence. The Master tries to make them understand in one way or the other, but they are so much filled and intoxicated with their mental merchandise that they fail to comprehend the greatness and sublimity of the holy path. You will please understand that mind has its various grooves wherein it clings fast. Basically, when we try to sit silent, only then will we come to know where the shoe pinches. The alphabet of spirituality commences with inner silence, which necessarily requires solitude and seclusion. It is only during these sacred moments of silence that we can understand the basic principles of spirituality and imbibe their right import. The wiles of the mind are both very subtle and risky. The mind often lies in ambush and makes its inroads when least expected. The ingrained evil propensities, though invisible, are very strong, and time and again they come to the surface to deliver blows which often prove fatal. The coil strikes out like lightning, with such sharp and sudden twists and turns that man by himself is helpless in its clutches. Here comes the need for the long and strong arm of the Master, which stretches forth with equal agility to his rescue. Herein the Master once again reminds us that mind is very wicked and tricky, for it will not readily accept the gospel of the Guru, however reasonable it may be. Knowing full well that we cannot avoid the decrees of heaven by any amount of wishful thinking, the mind continues planning and maneuvering otherwise. Our intellect, finite and limited as it is, cannot possibly comprehend the subtle activities of the mind, which goes on thinking endlessly. The only remedy for taming the hydra-headed mind is that of the holy Nam. By contacting the all-audible sound current within and the heaven's holy light, the mind becomes docile and forgets all else around it. This is the sovereign remedy for all the ills of the world, a panacea that cures all diseases of the body and mind. By administering to the mind regular doses of the celestial music emanating from the throne of God, the mind gets rid of the lower propensities and begins to enjoy and take delight in the higher, ravishing bliss of divine intoxication, which is the greatest gift of the Master. Never agree to the dictates of the mind, as it has 101 ways to keep you stuck fast in the physical body and the terrestrial plane. The hand of the negative power on your head will not allow the mind to obey you. The negative power will go on increasing the duality to make it more and more difficult and confusing. The negative will not help you to overcome this duality. Only the positive can do that. It is a marked difference between the powers. The negative power puts two strong impediments which are encountered by the initiates of the Master. Firstly, the mind will always be doubtful after the efficacy of holy meditations, and one will start missing the meditations and get devoted to alternative pursuits, substituting them with mere routine readings of the scriptures and other sacred texts. Secondly, the mind will bring forth an argument that there is no more need for him or her to call on the master, as initiation per se is sufficient for proceeding on the way, back to the home of the Father. Complacency retards inner progress. We are living on a plane which is governed by the negative power, and where the inexorable law of karma works supreme. The mind is the agent of this negative power, and in one way or the other it will entangle you to be kept tied to the many limitations of the body and worldly possessions. Such a skeptical mind will, instead of doing anything useful, find fault with the master and his path. Negative power has a vast dominion engulfing the first three planes, and those who happen to fall prey to the allurements of their mind, subtle and causal, are caught in finer fetters or bondages. The masters of the highest order, who came in the past, have left behind some useful treasures in the form of their precious experiences for our guidance, so that we may safely tread in their footsteps. Through the illusion of the body, you also become attached to material objects, and the result is that wherever your attention is, so you become that. You are under the influence of the mind and senses, which are feeding the senses through the outgoing faculties, and the more you feed them, the harder the mind will work, and the more strength it will get. Herein the Master conveys to us another sublime truth by telling us that we have been caught in the spider's web, having prepared a vast net of attachments for binding ourselves down in the mire of delusion and deception. You will appreciate that a spider weaves fine threads of its own secretions and gets entangled therein. Similarly, it is our own mind which has developed an unnecessary attachment with the physical body and its allied relations. Do you know what is the underlying basis of Maya or delusion? Its roots lie in the physical body from where it springs and spreads around like a gigantic upas tree. We readily forget that we are ensouled bodies and not merely physical bodies. It is the soul currents which permeate through and through the physical plane whereby it is enlivened, and they in turn get their sustenance from a higher life principle known as the Holy Nam, or the Word. So long as that divine power is working in us, we are alive, and as soon as that power is withdrawn, the whole structure collapses like a pack of cards, and it is then said, "Thus thou art, and unto dust returneth." It is better to guard the tendency of each other, because the objective mind is very powerful in the physical plane, and it is mutual satsang only, which checks out evil tendencies. Society of the people tends to scatter the mind. Mind is the most powerful, clever, and cunning enemy, and to release the spirit from its bondage, it is necessary to break attachments from the alluring material objects which are not ours and have been evolved by matter and Maya. Human nature is the same everywhere. The Pindi mind of the material universe does not like to be subdued because it has been free for so long and has become so much absorbed in this outer world that it has not only forgotten the worlds within, but has forgotten its own source, the Brahmandi mind, which is the mind of the second heaven, Trikuti. Instead of controlling the senses, it is now subject to them, and thus constantly wanders from one subject to another, without anything to rest upon. If by good luck it is comparatively free from the anxieties of life and hears of the worlds within, and occasionally has a point glimpse of the mere outskirts of these worlds, then instead of going in and bearing mastery over them, it is, alas, held out by fame. the last infirmity of noble minds, as Milton calls it. The fame and honor given by people keep it out just as much as ears are held by sweet music and the eye is held by attractive objects. In the guise of doing good to others, it deceives itself, and in ignorance knows not that the valuable time is being lost. First know thyself, and then preach. It is not proper to teach of a thing when one has not the first-hand knowledge of it. Step by step, the Master is opening up new vistas of right understanding by telling us what the root cause of this misconception is. He says that it is foolish for the human mind to be attached to outer fancies, infatuated by the colorful shell, and caring little for the sweet kernel within. The mind may be likened to a parasitical plant, which has no roots of its own, but draws its sustenance from the host tree to which it tenaciously holds. In exactly the same way, the mind in itself has no separate existence per se, but is a sheer projection of one's mental makeup, and is inextricably mixed up with the sense objects through the senses. It, at its lowest level, is bound to the body, while at its other end, the highest level, it is subtle enough to draw its sustenance from the soul. You must not feel disheartened and try to regain your inner happiness by doing your very best and leaving the rest to the gracious master power working overhead. Even the darkest cloud has a silver lining somewhere. He is fully aware of your distress and awaiting most eagerly to receive you within in faithful meditations. You are to be on the guard, lest your subconscious mind is fed with thoughts of gloom and morbidity. The mind makes no distinction between constructive and destructive thought impulses. The mind works with the material you feed it through your thought impulses. The subconscious mind will translate into reality a thought driven by fear just as readily as a thought driven by courage or faith. Just as electricity will turn the wheels of industry and render useful service if used constructively, or snuff out life if used wrongly. You are free to a great extent in this respect to be receptive to the thought impulses of faith, loving devotion, humility, and self-surrender, which will in turn bless you with peace and harmony. You must not dwell much on your confusion, but meet every situation with courage. My love and blessings are with you. Befriend the mind. Is there any good or helpful characteristic of mind? Yes, mind like Janus, the Roman god, with two faces looking in opposite directions, the god of gates and doorways. The mind, like Janus, has another face as well, if it is trained properly by gentle persuasion and kindly words of advice. With a little patting now and then, it can be converted from a formidable foe into a valuable friend and a helping hand to the soul in its search to bring about this conversion. And when it is done, one can have no better helpmate than the mind. It has the capacity, chameleon-like, to take on the color of the ground where it squats, and that indeed is a redeeming feature. When living on the circumference of life, it expands outwards, downward, but rooted as it is in the Gagan, the second heaven, Trikuti, the causal plane, rooted as the mind is in the Gagan, it is not impervious to the higher and holier influences of a master soul to whom it responds, and he channelizes it the other way about. The mind is undoubtedly our enemy and is too superior in strength to be annihilated. It is an innovation introduced by Swamiji, who tells us to make friends with the mind, which is an agent of the negative power and in its present state an enemy of the soul. Instead of fighting with the mind right and left and to no purpose, we may make the best use of the mind in a friendly way. You know that mind has a tendency to tread on much beaten tracks. That is, it creates grooves of habit and mechanically acts in a repetitive manner. Just see for yourself if you do something at a fixed time and continue doing so for a number of days at the same time, a habit is formed. And after some time, it will become part and parcel of your daily routine. So this is the easiest way of overpowering this powerful idiot. Instead of fighting with it outright in an unequal struggle, we can turn to our advantage this weakness by devoting regular time to the holy meditations at the fixed time with religious zeal and punctuality. It will be seen that after some time, the inner revelations will arm you with something far superior, and the mind itself, which used to resent inversion, will also start relishing the inversion and gradually give up its past pleasures. The Master gives us a positive approach for the solution of this riddle, which is so easy and interesting to solve by making a friendly alliance with the mind instead of making it an inveterate foe. Nothing can be gained by cursing the mind, for the mind is no small thing, so the Master's advice is to befriend it. The mind's habit is to drag everything downward, yet as your friend, even if it wants to hurt you, it will not do so. Under such an arrangement, he might even cooperate with you. If he desires food, then agree. Yes, I will give you food, but first let us do a little meditation. Then we will have food. If you immediately refuse the food, he will be tormented with the desire for it. He is like a stubborn donkey. The more you restrict him, the more stubborn he becomes. It is a very accurate definition of the mind. If you make a note in a book, do not read page so-and-so, it will be the first page people will read. They won't be able to resist the temptation. So make your mind a companion. Don't fight with him. That concludes today's reading on page 135 of the Teachings of Kirpal Singh, Volume 2. Thank you, beloved Master, for your incredible truth and love and words of such wisdom. We are so grateful.
And thank you, Jack, for reading for us. We had 79 callers at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now, please hang up your phones.